I wonder what Kanye is doing today.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble. NBA preseason is well and truly underway. Interesting things happening right across the league. So I thought it was time for us to go back and just check on some things that have happened over the last few days and some storylines across the preseason. And to do that, I'm joined by a first time guest. He's the national NBA writer for the Washington Post, and it is Tim Bontemps. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks for having me. And I got to say, as somebody who usually listens to podcasts on 2X speed, it's interesting hearing you talk in 1X and live back and forth. It's pretty funny. Happy to be here.
It's so weird to do that because I do the same as well. So when you meet people and speak to people who you normally listen to on the podcast, you wonder why they're speaking so slow. It's
very
such a,
true.
Because I do the same with your podcast and I listen to it. And I remember I once had your podcast on and had it for some reason at 1x speed and heard the intro music and I thought I was going crazy. I go, why is this song so slow? Where's the beat? What's going on? It's a weird.
That's right.
It's a weird thing, especially when you meet someone face to face and you haven't spoken to them before and you're only used to 2x speed. It really is a spin out, but that's the perils of trying to listen to trying to cram as much hashtag content into the day as possible.
That's right.
Let's talk preseason, Tim, because there's stuff. There's always stuff happening in the NBA. I want to talk about a few of the things that have gone on, and you can let us know your thoughts on some of that stuff that has gone down so far across the NBA. But I want to start with Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks, who in his one preseason game looked pretty good. Now there's lots of skepticism, and there was a lot of skepticism around Doncic. But the recent NBA GM survey that came out, the GMs all seemed to think that he was the favorite for the Rookie of the Year. Is there been any change, I guess, in the national perception of Doncic after we saw him again, not against NBA competition, but with NBA caliber talent next to him in that first game for Dallas against Beijing?
I mean, listen, I have been all in on him, Josh, since well before he got drafted. I think people, for xenophobic reasons, look at a white guy and just kind of assume things about him that aren't really applicable to Luka. And I mean, to me, I think long term he has a chance to be a James Harden type player in the league. I mean, he's got a devastating step back. He's got unbelievable vision. I mean, you can argue that he might be second to LeBron James in terms of passing big men and like forward type big men in the league already as a rookie. He's going to run a lot of point forward in Dallas. I thought him going to Dallas from a fantasy perspective was about as good of a situation as he could have walked into, because Rick Carlisle is a really creative coach, one of the best offensive minds in the league. Him pairing with Dennis Smith Jr., running Luka as kind of a point power forward, kind of a point forward deal, having the two of them be kind of the two ball handlers that Carlisle likes to have on the court, I think is going to allow them to really be able to attack and get a lot of open looks for people. Like you said, they were playing the Beijing Ducks, so there is a little bit of you have to be a little bit skeptical about what you saw the other day. But I'm certainly with the GM survey. I think if he's healthy, he should be a shoo-in to win Rookie of the Year this year. And I think you've properly cautioned that maybe this year, like most rookies, I don't know if he's going to necessarily live up to where is in terms of where he's going to be drafted. But if there's anybody in any kind of dynasty draft format, first overall, and I think long term he's going to be a guy that you're going to be looking at as a really monster fantasy player for a long time.
Yeah, this is a guy that when you look at these things, in again, it's hard to judge with that level of competition, of course, but when he comes in and does the things that we saw him do over in Spain, you can only do what you do against the opponent provided, and every step of the way he's been able to do that and exceed that expectation. So at some point you have to just start believing that he is as good as what he actually is, and that's the interesting thing here with Doncic. We're going to obviously learn more, but he looks excellent. Johnson, a really solid mid-round type of guy that you probably wouldn't be reaching into the top 50, but very, very easily he could be a top 50 for this coming season. Yeah, it's just going to come down to, I think, how his efficiency is going to look. Is he going to be, you know, strong there? Is he going to be weak? I think he's going to be fine. He looks awesome. And I like that you brought up that James Harden comparison, because that's the guy that I did compare him to coming out of the draft, just with his ability to see the court and to be a not athletic, so to speak, but still get to where right. He wants and get there before everyone else, because his brain is just working at a more accelerated level than a lot of the guys that are trying to guard him.
No question. I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just going to say he's a really big guy. I mean, he's 6'7", 6'8", and you know, he's going to be able to use his size, kind of like Carmelo Anthony used to be able to when he was in his prime, is kind of, I think, to be able to kind of get to his spots. And like you said, James Harden is a guy who is not looked at as, like, you know, a hyper athlete, but the ball and where he's going to go and get there before he's able to get to it. I think, you know, Luka is a bigger, kind of a bigger version of that, just has a chance to be a really terrific player and a monster fantasy guy.
Let's talk about the big story that at the time of us recording, nothing has happened with this yet, Tim, and that is the Jimmy Butler scenario. We hear whispers coming out yesterday from Woj, you know, talking about the Timberwolves looking to get Josh Richardson, Bam Adebayo, and a first-round pick. Woj also talking about that Butler, if his wrist is healthy, won't plan on missing any games, and Thibodeau doubling down on not wanting to trade him. What's the latest you've heard on this Butler scenario? You saw the Wolves in person yesterday. What's the latest happening around this scenario?
I mean, this thing is just a total mess. You know, the Wolves have been asking for very exorbitant packages from teams. Teams have not been willing to pay up. Teams, I think, are nervous about paying Jimmy a full 5-year deal if they trade for him. This is a guy who you know, and this matters certainly for fantasy purposes. This is a guy who's missed at least 15 games in 4 of the last 5 years. He's now 30 years old. He's probably not going to get healthier as he goes along, though it is possible. So I think that's a risk for teams that they trade for him. So there's a lot of uncertainty there. I do think that at some point the Wolves are probably going to have to trade him. I do think that at some point he's probably going to wind up getting traded to Miami. I think when you look at the teams that Jimmy has been interested in going to, Miami to me has always made the most sense in a trade for two reasons. One, they have a lot of NBA-ready guys they can throw into a trade to allow the Wolves to be as competitive as possible right now, which is what I think Tom Thibodeau wants. And also, the Heat are the one team among those teams, you know, Brooklyn, New York, the Clippers, that won't have cap space next summer to sign him. So they, unlike those other teams, they are really motivated, I think, to try to get a star now because this is their chance to do it. So I think kind of regardless of where Jimmy ends up, I don't really see his numbers changing a lot, to be honest. I guess from a fantasy standpoint, perhaps if he gets traded to Miami, maybe that would impact Karl Towns, if Karl can be a bit more of a focal point than he has been in the past. Or at least he was last year, I should say. And maybe he gets more touches and allows, you know, that efficiency, you know, that he has, you know, from really everywhere on the court offensively to really just take another step up in volume, which would certainly help from a fantasy standpoint. But I think Jimmy Butler, whether he's in Miami or Minnesota or elsewhere, is going to be out there doing kind of whatever he does on a nightly basis. I think the biggest question I would have from a fantasy standpoint with him is just how often is he going to be on the court? And I'd probably assume he's going to miss 15 games or so. And if that's the case, I would say you probably have to dock him a little bit in your ranks going into your draft compared to where it would normally take a guy, you know, with the kind of skill set he has to across the board.
With Butler, it is interesting. Yeah, in terms of his per minute production, he's a guy that's good enough that no matter where he goes, I think he's going to be able to put up those numbers. But I guess the question we have is, does going from 52 minutes per game in Minnesota to playing a more reasonable 33, like, you know, Spoelstra just spreads that rotation out, and that's a pretty deep team now. Some of that depth might be impacted by a trade that does occur there. Does he go from 37 a night? Does he go down to 34? And people will make that argument. He still played 37 7 a night when he played under Fred Hoiberg, but I feel some of that was Hoiberg telling, Butler telling Hoiberg, I'm playing 37 a night, rather than Hoiberg saying,
I would agree. So, I would agree.
And Spoelstra doesn't have that issue. He'll be like, nah, Jim, look, you can come back and play 33, 34. You'll still be the guy, but we don't need you burning out and every single February, March, sitting out for a month. And that might help there, but it also might drop some of his per-minute numbers down. Now, if the trade doesn't get done, Tim, by the start of the regular season, do you see him playing for Minnesota, as that Woj tweet, I guess, cautiously mentioned, or was the implication of the wrist injury there saying that, well, if he isn't get traded, he'll just claim he's still injured and won't end up playing?
I think he probably will play, Josh, just because he needs to get paid, right? Yep. And if he doesn't, like, you know, the Kawhi Leonard situation last year was very bizarre, and I mean, that's just not something that's going to happen very often. So, I mean, to me, if for some reason a trade doesn't happen by mid-October, I think he'll probably play and at least show he's healthy. And then, you know, the other thing, too, is maybe he plays in Minnesota for a month or two if it comes to that. But, you know, once you get to December 15th, then all these guys that got signed this summer are available to be traded. Then maybe, you know, as a team like the Lakers get involved, because then they actually will have some flexibility from the guys they signed to be able to move some of them in a deal. So does that happen? Or does, do some of these other teams that made moves over the summer get involved? Does Houston then have some more flexibility to try to do something? You know, they would love to trade for Jimmy. But for them to do so, they probably have to get a bunch of other teams involved, and it becomes very complicated. So, look, I think at the end of the day, like you said, I think the only thing that's going to impact him is if he gets traded somewhere else, does he play a few less minutes a game? And if he stays in Minnesota, how does that impact Towns, who, you know, like we saw last year, you know, didn't always get the ball as much as, you know, either I think Wolves fans or us as fantasy players would have liked. But I don't think that there's going to be a great deal of difference in terms of, you know, where he's playing on October 16th in terms of the raw production he's giving you on a permanent basis. Because like you said, he's a stud, and no matter where he winds up, he's going to have the ball in his hands all the time.
Yeah, it's going to be the same sort of stuff. Now, if he does leave from Minnesota, what you said about Towns is correct, but I think we do have to factor in that even if Butler does go, there's still going to be Derrick Rose out there to take as many shots away from the best player on the team as possible.
And he seems to be starting in Jimmy Butler's place at shooting guard, which is not ideal.
Well, that's why we just hope that another shooting guard comes back in this sort of a deal, so it enables him to get in there and Rose can go back to what he can be effective in a bench type of role. But yeah, not good in that starting role so far. Let's move on to the next point. A weird situation, just your quick take on this, Tim, because you are out there in the Bay Area. Patrick McCaw, the restricted free agency situation, his advisors telling him to take the offer the Warriors put out there, him declining it, and his father starting to put his two bobs worth in regards to getting a larger role. Where is this headed at the moment? Are we going to see McCaw actually play at all this season? It seems a really weird and I guess troublesome situation for what this means for his future.
I have no idea what to make of this entire situation, to be completely honest. It is baffling to me. I mean, the things that he apparently is upset about, like in terms of not getting minutes or not having a big enough role, I don't know. He's playing on the oldest team in the NBA, a team that is desperate for any kind of wing help it can get and wants to rest its star players.
Yeah.
So in theory, if he would show up and play, he would get minutes and be able to play and prove himself and be able to get himself paid next summer. I mean, I'm just not sure Patrick McCaw, frankly, is any good. People forget because he had that really ugly fall in Sacramento and basically missed the rest of the season. He was horrible last season, particularly after, say, Christmas. I mean, he really was looked pretty afraid to shoot for long stretches of time. He's not a guy who's going to put the ball on the floor and really make plays. He can get some steals, but, you know, he's pretty slight. He probably is a guy, you know, maybe he can guard threes. He probably can guard ones and twos. Maybe he can, like, his ceiling is probably to turn into Avery Bradley, right? Like, in the absolute best case scenario.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Yeah. So, like, okay, maybe he's a little bit bigger versus Avery Bradley, which is a nice player, but if you're terrified to shoot, and you're trying to become Avery Bradley, well, that's not really a player that you can use. So, I mean, to me, from a fantasy perspective, if you're in a super deep league, you know, maybe he's a guy that you take a swing on late and hope that he shows up and plays at some point. But, you know, I mean, to me, like, I just don't really get what his end game is here. And I imagine he'll show up at some point and sign some kind of deal with Golden State. But I don't really know where this is going. And frankly, the way this is playing out now, you know, guys like Jacob Evans are probably, and, you know, they've got Jacob Evans and Jonas Jerebko there on the wing. My guess is they're probably just going to play those guys and say, well, if McCaw decides not to show up, he doesn't show up, and they'll move on. So it is a really weird situation. And I don't really know what the end game is, because frankly, I'm not sure anybody knows exactly what McCaw's end game is here, because there isn't a lot of logic to how this has played out.
Because, look, last look, he showed a bit of promise as a rookie, and I was pretty interested in what he could do defensively, a little bit of ball handling.
Right.
But last season, he took a massive step back, so I don't understand how he can think in the way that he played last season, especially coming and with an injury now as well, that he's deserving of this much larger role. I think he's can be good. I think he can be solid enough, but you get a huge, huge step back from him last season, and a really weird scenario. Not going to impact too much in fantasy, but it is one of the weirdest stories in the NBA at the moment, just having him
definitely
sitting
is strange.
There.
Yeah, there's no question about that. It's one of the weirder stories I can remember, because, like, you just don't hear about a guy being told, hey, take this offer, and then them saying, nah, I'm not going to do it. I mean, that it just doesn't happen ever in the league. Like, it, and again, like you said, like, he wasn't good last year. He was decent as a rookie, showed some promise, but then he was really bad last year. Like, he doesn't have a ton of leverage. He now doesn't have a qualifying offer. I don't really get what the end game is. Like, this isn't even like Domantas Sabonis a couple of years ago, and he had shown some real promise as a player and kind of got stuck in a weird no man's land. Like, this is kind of like, you know, McCaw doesn't have a market. So I don't know how sitting out is going to generate one, but, you know, I guess we'll wait and see how it plays out.
The other one, I spoke about this at the start of the week, but I wanted to get your take on it, is Markelle Fultz back starting in Philadelphia over J.J. Redick. It appears that the Sixers want to give him every chance to earn that job. Yeah, heading into the season, I thought he looked pretty solid. He does what he was doing last season, except now he's got a little bit more confidence in the shot. He can get to wherever he wants on the court. He's got some defensive instincts. How have you made of the combination of him working with those starters, with Embiid, with Simmons, and how different do you think Fultz looks from now as opposed to last season? And is he the box seat favorite for that starting job heading into the middle of October?
Well, I haven't got a chance to really sit down and go through his shots. That's something I want to do tomorrow. I'm going to watch that game tomorrow. And I guess depending on when this comes out, Friday morning, they're playing in China against the Mavs. And I really want to sit and watch, you know, there's a lot going on in that game. Obviously Dennis Smith and Luka and those Sixer guys, I mean, that's going to be a lot to take in. So I'm excited to see what he looks like. But I have watched a few clips of him shooting. The shot does look better. He looks pretty good off the dribble. The three-point shot still looks kind of iffy. I'm not sure about that. But, I mean, I think you're right. You look at the overall situation here, and it's very clear that they want to make that work, right? And they want him to be – I mean, remember, this guy was – the number one overall pick last year. And I went and watched him play three times in college, and Josh, he was unbelievable in college. Like, I mean, there were scouts who went to these games who thought, like, I thought he was somewhere between John Wall and Dwayne Wade, because he was so unbelievably fast. And unlike John Wall, who couldn't shoot at all, he could shoot a little bit.
Yeah. He hit over 40% of these threes.
Yeah. He could shoot to the 3-point line, and he could break down. Like, he was playing on a Washington team that had no players on it. I mean, they played against Lonzo Ball in UCLA, and they lost by 35 or 40 points. And he was on just a wretched team with a bad coach, and it was just a disaster situation. But he had, like, 25 points and 7 assists and could have had 15 assists. I mean, he was splitting double teams and dropping balls off to guys under the basket for a layup that they would miss. I mean, it was just a comically bad situation. But this guy – I mean, he was a number one pick with a bullet. Like, this isn't a guy. Like, full credit to the Celtics for getting an asset and taking Jason Tatum. But, I mean, let's be honest. It wasn't like there was a massive contingent of people going, oh, man, the Sixers are so dumb for trading up to get Markelle Fultz. I mean, people looked at him and were like, this guy is a stud. So I get what they're trying to do. I think it's really, really interesting that they are trying to get him into the starting lineup and play him with Simmons. You know, coming into the draft, when they made that trade, I should say, I really understood why the Sixers made it, because in theory, he should be a perfect fit next to Ben Simmons as a guy who can shoot it from three a little bit, who is unbelievably fast off the dribble, who's big and rangy and should be able to guard, whether it's point guards or shooting guards or, you know, maybe even some threes. I mean, he's 6'4" with super long arms and he's pretty thick. I mean, he should be able to guard multiple positions without much trouble. I totally get why they're starting him, but, you know, given how unsure everybody was about where his shot was, you know, I thought it was really interesting that they came right out and said, hey, you know, we're going to make him our starter. We're going to do this right now. Like you said, it wasn't like, hey, we're going to ease him in. You know, we're going to let him play 15 minutes a game off the bench. It's like, nope, this is our guy. He's going to start. And I mean, to me, he's one of the real X factors in the whole league this year, because if he is able to be something close to what he was supposed to be as a rookie, and all of a sudden the Sixers have another really talented player on the perimeter, all of a sudden that takes, to me, their ceiling to a far another level, and, you know, gives, you know, it should take some pressure off Simmons, should give Embiid more options. I mean, it really could open them up in a lot of dynamic ways. So, there's still a lot to sort out there, undoubtedly, but I think that's one of the biggest storylines of the entire league right now, because if he is good, that's a truly game-changing situation for the Sixers and what they want to do.
If you haven't watched Fultz in college, go back and you can find those videos and clips on YouTube. Go and watch some of that, what he did in Washington. It was crazy. And you're right, it was the perfect fit next to Simmons, because he was hitting 40% of his threes. He looked so comfortable. He gets to where he wants. He draws players into him to kick things out.
He's just so fast, too.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable.
And we saw that last season, even when he came back for those last five or six games of the season, the shots weren't going in and he looked hesitant, but he got to wherever he wanted to. Wherever was a good spot, he could get there without any problems at all after having so much time off. And it's a ballsy move from the Sixers to just come out and say, well, bang, you're in, let's start and let's go. But they must have supreme confidence, or trying to at least build his confidence back up. And so far, I think it's worked. And he is a strong, strong middle to late round guy who could really push into the top 60 if everything works out. I wouldn't be taking him there. But at this point, yeah, he had an ADP of around 100. And I just didn't know what they were going to do, whether they were going to play him 22 minutes a night. I thought that's a bit risky. But now, go for it. That is perfect to get him there, and he's got a real chance to exceed that number based on what they've been doing with him so far.
No question. I mean, Markel's a guy that could win a league for you. I mean, he also could lose a league for you in theory. But like, if you draft him, say 80 or 90 or 100, he could be a top. I mean, he could even be a top 40 guy if it works.
He could.
I mean, he's got the potential to just be a monster player in fantasy. And if it does click, and he is averaging, 16, 5, and 5 with a steal a game or something, if he is able to shoot a half decent percentage, all of a sudden, that's a pretty big time player. You get him that late. So you're right. The projections for him are all over the board, because you can't be sure what he's going to look like. But if it does work out, I mean, that's a guy that could really swing a lot of leagues if it breaks the right way.
We all love Josh Richardson from a fantasy point of view because of his ability to go and block a shot as a guard and get steals. Markel Fultz can do that, but he can also get more assists and he can score a higher volume. So he's like supercharged Josh Richardson if everything comes together. We don't know that if he's going to be able to do that, but this is a guy that can, as you said, he could average 16 points and get 5 assists and be a strong rebound and average a steal and a half and average a block. And those numbers are excellent. So the upside is massive. And he is, as you said, one of the best or most intriguing stories to watch through this season and make the Sixers even more of a must-watch team than they were last season. I posed this question yesterday on Twitter, Tim, and unsurprisingly, I had multiple different answers, but I want to get your opinion on this. You aren't there at the moment, but you did cover the Nets for a while. Who's their best player at the moment?
That's an interesting question. I didn't actually see you ask that. I have my top 100 coming out next week, and I almost put Jared Allen in it. He's on my list of potential breakout guys. I know you're a big fan of his. So, yep. I mean, from a ceiling perspective, I would probably say him. From a present day NBA standpoint, you can go a few different ways there. I mean, that's kind of the weird thing about them. I don't know if there is a sure answer. I mean, based off last year, you could maybe go with Damari Carroll. You could maybe go with Spencer Dinwiddie. You could maybe go with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. They've got a bunch of solid guys, but they don't have any real standout guys. So, I would say by the end of this season, I think Jared Allen has got a very good chance to be that guy. But today, based off of last year, I guess I'd maybe say Spencer. But it's a really interesting question because I'm really not sure what the right answer would be.
I was watching the Knicks-Nets game yesterday, and I was trying to work that out, and I thought, for sure, everyone's going to have different opinions on this. Some people threw out Jared Allen, some threw Spencer Dinwiddie out, some threw out Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. A lot of people said D'Angelo Russell, and it really triggered my mind that there are a ton of people who are irrationally in love with D'Angelo Russell, and I think he can be still okay, but he's not their best player. The guy that I'm really interested in for this team is Caris LeVert, who did start yesterday. They moved Damari Carroll to power forward because Rondae Hollis-Jefferson hurt his groin 2 months ago. Oh, it was no big deal. Still hasn't practiced. I don't know what's going on there. That's a troublesome situation, the fact that it was 2 months ago that he hurt his groin and they were all downplaying, and he's still not ready to go. That is a level of concern there. But LeVert slotted in to the starting small forward job. I think that he could actually remain there and they might move Damari Carroll to the bench, or Damari needs to start at power forward because Rondae is not ready. LeVert looks solid. He can defend. He can score. He can pass. I think, personally, it is a hard question who is the best player. I think it might be LeVert. I think you're right. It probably will be Allen at some point by the end of the season. But I'm really liking what I'm seeing from LeVert on this team. And everything, again, when it comes out from one source where someone says, oh, this guy's having a great camp, you go, oh, that's fine. Like, you have to say this stuff. But when it comes out from everybody, that's when you go, oh, well, every single person saying this. And I used this example with Richardson where everyone said, oh, he wants to average more points, and it came from every part of the organization. I went, okay, I need to pay attention. But with LeVert, it's the same thing. Everyone is talking about him in Brooklyn taking this step forward, and I'm pretty interested to see where he goes. And he looked good in their first preseason game.
And he's a guy that, going back to when they traded Thaddeus Young for the pick to draft him, they've been really enamored with. Going all the way back to that draft process. So, that was one of the first moves this front office led by Sean Marks made. I really like him, to your point. He really fits in the way the modern NBA is going. He's a long-rangey guy, can guard multiple spots, can play multiple spots. And he was interesting, showed the ability to create a little bit. I like where you're going with that. And he certainly has the potential to be a really interesting guy. And I have heard similar things that they're very excited about him. And, I would not be at all surprised. I mean, I think given the way they want to play, I would not be surprised at all if he spends the year starting at small forward. And then, like you said, they either slide Damari to power forward, or they have Rondae start there or whatever. But if you tell me that Caris LeVert is the starting small forward for the Nets this year, either until they make a trade or they do something different, it wouldn't surprise me in the least. And he's a guy, like I said, that front office has been enamored with since they drafted him. And I think if he shows an ability to, try him to flourish in there.
I'm big on him. I've been big on him since he was drafted. So it's good to see that all starting to come to fruition. Probably the biggest, I guess, surprise name, maybe not surprise, but the guy that people are getting pretty hyped about is in Charlotte, Tim, and that's Miles Bridges, who's looked excellent so far in the preseason, averaging almost 16 points across the three games. He's shooting ridiculously well, 58 from the field and 53 from three, which of course is going to come down. But with the subpar play of Frank Kaminsky and the fact that they seem to view him almost exclusively as a center and the third string center at that, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist dealing with concussions and already probably in a limited role, and Marvin Williams, the incumbent power forward, I have to feel that Bridges is pushing into the rotation somehow for this team. Is there any word of what they're looking at with him? Are they looking at him as a much larger role than what they perhaps were when they drafted him? Because he has looked impressive, even though these shooting numbers are going to drop off for Bridges. But he's got a chance to push ahead of a guy like Kaminsky, who is he's really struggling at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, look, Kaminsky, in the last year of his deal, drafted by a previous regime, I think the chances of them betting on him as opposed to betting on Miles Bridges, a guy they just drafted this year with a new coach and a new front office, I certainly am with you. I think that's a likely way to go. I watched a little bit of the Celtics-Hornets game last week, and I was impressed with what I saw from Bridges. He's a guy that was really hyped 2 years ago at Michigan State. He then decided to go back again for his sophomore year and fell down boards a little bit, but would not at all surprise me if he becomes a guy that's an interesting long-term fit in the league. You know, his shot is always the one thing that people have been wondering about, but if he can knock down shots, I mean, he's a thick, athletic guy. He should be able to guard a ton of positions. He plays really hard. It's the kind of guy that coaches really like. You know, I could definitely see him becoming a really interesting piece if that shot looks good. And like you said, on a Hornets team that doesn't exactly have a ton going for it right now, if they can get a young guy like that going, I think there's little doubt that they're going to go out of their way to try to, you know, allow him to take advantage of that as much as he can. So I, again, as you say a lot on the pod, I think it's always dangerous to put a lot of stock in a rookie in fantasy in particular, just because, you know, they're probably not going to be efficient and their production's going to go up and down. But Miles is a guy that is going to have a chance to carve himself out a role if things go right, because, you know, you look at that situation in Charlotte, they just need things for people to get excited about with that new regime. And, you know, he's got a chance to be one of the few that actually has the ability to deliver that.
We look at his games from the preseason, 16 points is nice, but that efficiency is not going to stick. 69% true shooting is not going to be the case, and he hasn't really generated much in assists, steals, or blocks, and that's, I guess, somewhat of a concern with him. Did block shots at a pretty decent rate in college. The steal rate wasn't fantastic, so that all, and assist rate at the same. That does limit his fantasy upside there, and he's probably not pushing into a 30-minute role at this point, but I thought he might struggle to be in the rotation, him and Kidd-Gilchrist battling for that last spot. I think he's ahead of MKG. I think he's ahead of Kaminsky at this point. And yeah, playing more power forward, the rebound number's been pretty good. He has been really, really impressive. Not sure he's really a standard league fantasy guy at this point, but he's taken some pretty big steps forward and showed quite a bit so far across the preseason. Let's go to Cleveland now, Tim, where it appears that we're going to have Rodney Hood and Chetty Osman as the starters there. That we hear this, you know, talk that the front office wants to, you know, be competitive, but there's also the other whispers that the front office wants to encourage Ty Lue to play these young guys. So sometimes that can be counterintuitive as to those two things both working together. But with, are we seeing just a much lower role coming for J.R. Smith, for Kyle Korver, for this upcoming season? Where does David Nwaba fit into that role? There's a bunch of these players in this spot, even Jordan Clarkson, if we're assuming that George Hill and Colin Sexton are playing all at point guard. How's this all going to work out? And could someone like Korver find themselves on the outside looking in?
It's very possible. That's a tricky situation to monitor, right? Because, you know, I think certainly early on the Cavs are going to do everything they can to win as many games as possible. But if they struggle or they have injuries, say Kevin Love gets hurt and they start to slip out of the playoff picture, at that point, you know, do they then start to look around and go, hey, it's in our best interest to, you know, maybe try to move Kevin or, you know, try to develop the young guys more? You know, I think playing Osman and Hood, I think, makes some sense for them on a couple levels. You know, I don't know if Korver's ever going to fall out of the rotation, but it wouldn't shock me if JR did. You know, I could see them trading Korver for a pick, you know, especially if they fall out of the playoffs. Korver on a pretty reasonable contract is a really good dude. Everybody's always looking for shooting. That's the kind of guy I could see a team giving up an asset to get, especially if they can get rid of some dead money to do so. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that could potentially happen in Cleveland. You know, they got George Hill there with Colin Sexton. I'm sure at some point they're going to watch Sexton to play a lot. Did they move on from Hill? There's just a lot of stuff happening there. And you know, I'd be surprised if the Cavs, the same team the Cavs start the season with here in a couple of weeks, is the same one they have at the end of the season, because they – for one reason or another, to make a couple of trades this season.
Osman's been an interesting one. In summer league, we saw him excel. In European play, we saw him excel and taking on a different role than what we had seen from him in the NBA. And I kept talking about, like, without LeBron on this team, somebody is going to have to get assists. George Hill's not a high assist guy. J.R. Smith gets none. Hood gets none. Kevin Love will bump that number back up. But someone is going to have to initiate some of these plays. Colin Sexton's not even a high assist guy. And Osman has done it in his time in Europe, did it in summer league. did it again in playing for Turkey, and has done it again in the preseason. I think he's in for a really big season. He looks to be someone that they are really keen on, not necessarily building around, but part of their young core, along with Sexton, and apparently along with Nance as well. And they seem really invested in him. I wouldn't be shocked if he came out and had a top 100 season and put up, you know, some really significant numbers, given what we've seen from him and the, I guess, the apparent trust or belief in him being that guy that can actually do it for them this season.
No question. He is a guy they've been excited about. Also, kind of going back to the LeVert thing, since he got drafted there, that's a guy they targeted. They got him with, I think, the first or second pick in the second round. Might have been the very first pick. You know, they wanted him. They got him. And, yeah, he's got a chance, like you said. I mean, there's a lot here and kind of attack this opening and take advantage of it. And, you know, I think they're going to give him a lot of rope to try to do so. And like you said, you look at those other wing options. David Nwaba's not a guy that can do anything with the ball. JR doesn't pass. Korver, you know, Korver's not a guy that's, you know, when he has the ball in his hands, generally to catch it and shoot it or get rid of it again. You know, and Hood is not really that kind of guy that we can't create some. So, you know, if they do kind of have somebody, some other perimeter creator, you know, it is probably going to be Osmond. It could allow him to really have some, you know, some big production this year. If he's able to take advantage of the opportunity, it looks like it's going to be presented with.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to be able to take that opportunity. He looks really, really strong at the moment as well. Let's go to another wing situation, and that is in Houston. Some conflicting reports coming out. We initially thought that Carmelo Anthony had a chance to start, and then there was, you know, he'd come off the bench and James Ennis would start. Then there were reports that they were looking at Eric Gordon starting at small forward. That isn't how they lined up in their first preseason game. Is there any inkling that the Rockets would be looking to start that three-guard lineup, or is Ennis in the box? How are we viewing this Rockets situation? Because Gordon, even though people look at it and start, yeah, someone starting, that's great, but he still plays a bunch of minutes, and when he plays alongside Harden and Paul, it does really impact his numbers, and I highlight this all the time. I think he was a top 40 guy when one of those guys was injured last season, and then outside the top 120 when he had to play with both of them. But if he's sharing the starting lineup with him, that's even worse for his overall value. So do we have any indication of how this is looking with Gordon or Ennis? I don't think Melo's really in that discussion, and how D'Antoni is looking to run his rotations.
It's still early in the season, but I'm with you. I don't really think it matters a whole ton how this plays out if they're all healthy. I mean, I think it comes down much more to if all those guys are on the court, because like you said, if James and Chris are healthy, that's a lot of usage that they're taking up, right? Yep. It's like you talk about all the time. You know, you're kind of in fantasy, you're either hunting for usage or you're hunting for percentages, right? Like, and that's kind of from this standpoint, you know, Eric is never a guy that with those two guys out there, healthy playing, is going to have the same usage he would if one of them is out. So, you know, I don't think it matters much whether he starts or not, because I think, you know, his touches and his minutes are probably not going to be any different either way. If they're both out there. And I think if he is starting and one of them isn't out there, he's going to have a big jump. So, I'm not really too worried. I mean, I'm kind of intrigued to see whether they start Eric or Ennis or Carmelo or what, just given some of the names and personalities involved there. But I don't think that choice is going to have a great deal of impact on either how the Rockets do this season or their, you know, or their success or failure on a nightly basis to grind out wins.
Gordon's someone that, yeah, people will often come to me and say, man, Eric Gordon, why is he available at pick 120 in my league? Why is he on my waiver wire? And the reason I tell him is because for the second half of last season, he was the 132nd ranked player. Now you've got to add Carmelo Anthony in the mix, who's going to take some of those shots and take the ball out of his hand some. He's a low up, look, he's really useful for what they do, and he's a solid NBA player. But in terms of fantasy, his upside is so significantly low, unless Chris Paul goes down. If you're assuming Chris Paul's going to miss more than the 35 games or 30 games that he missed last season, Gordon was ranked 96th last season. So you'd want Paul and then Melo to miss more than that for him to actually push higher than that. It just seems like an unrealistic scenario. He is going to turn 30 in a couple of months as well. we love what he can do, but overall for fantasy, the upside just isn't there. And I think it actually decreases if he starts and plays more minutes alongside Harden and Paul. In terms of the Rocket success, it doesn't matter too much. But this, if you see that Gordon does start at the start of the season, don't get overly excited. Go, man, he started now. I've got to go and add him, because it probably ends up hurting him more. Very similar to how I've mentioned that with Will Barton in Denver quite a bit, that probably starting alongside those guys puts a cap on what he does fantasy-wise. So we'll see how that all plays out. But just something to bear in mind, that if Gordon does start, it doesn't mean that, yeah, it's all great and top 70s are on its way. For the Clippers, Tim, I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, look, Danilo Gallinari and Tobias Harris have looked really, really good, but Shai looked excellent. He started in place of Avery Bradley. We know he's big, he's long, he can handle the ball, he can defend. Avery Bradley was a disaster last season. He didn't start off the preseason all that strongly. Pat Beverly's still around there. Do you think that Shai is going to be in the rotation from night one? Because Miloš Teodosic has been out in the preseason. I personally think that Shai will be in there straight away. And do you think he's got a chance to actually supplant Beverly, or perhaps more likely Bradley, in the starting lineup at some point this season as his talent becomes undeniable? Not sure if Tim's still there. Just drop out. Tim has dropped out, so we'll get him back in just a second. Oh, no, you got your back. Tim, you're back.
Yeah, sorry about that. My phone went on the fritz. I don't know what happened. Hope they didn't screw your recording up.
All good. Did you hear the question about Gilgeous-Alexander?
I cut out in the middle of it, but I heard you saying that he was quite good, which he was.
Yeah. So
then I cut out.
The question that I did pose was, do you think that there is a chance that this talent becomes so undeniable that he is taking the starting job off Patrick Beverley or Avery Bradley at some point in the season? And do you think that, you know, with Miloš Teodosic still dealing with the injury, will Shai be in the rotation from night one, assuming Miloš is healthy?
Well, they are really fired up about Shai, and I think he's going to get a chance to play and play a lot. I don't know if he's going to necessarily start from day one, but if he does, it would not surprise me. If he does start, it would not surprise me. I could see, I mean, the thing you have to remember about the Clippers, they have 17 guaranteed contracts on the books right now. So they have to get rid of two guys by the start of the season. I would be very stunned if Juwan Evans is not one of them. And then the second one, you know, do they move on from Wes Johnson? Do they move on from, Sindarius Thornwell or a Ty Wallace? One of the more skeptical they do that. Or do they potentially either cut Miloš if he's healthy anytime soon? Or do they trade him or Beverly somewhere? I could see them, you know, say Phoenix, which needs a point guard, right? Does Phoenix give up maybe a second-round pick to get Beverly or Miloš? You know, probably Beverly, given Beverly's healthy. And then all of a sudden you get rid of that roster spot, which you don't have, and all by the way, then you can have a ton of minutes. But they're really fired up about him. They think he's got a chance to be really good. And I think even though Doc Rivers is not a chance to be a really interesting player on a variety of levels, and especially as they're trying to prepare for free agency next summer, you know, if they can have him really, you know, pop as a player this year and look like a guy that's going to be a stud for the next couple of years on a rookie deal, that's something that can go to some of these star players who are trying to sign and say, hey, young guy you can walk in with and know you've got on a cheap deal for a couple of years is going to be really, really good. So that gives them even more incentive to try to see what they've gotten him and show that he is a big time player.
Yeah, look, he's been super impressive so far. And I think, you know, I had him, I think, eighth in my dynasty rookie rankings. I can even consider moving him ahead of Marvin Bagley at some point, just given the position he plays and how he's able to do it. He's looked really good. Now, I do think he will start at some point this season, whether that's because of a trade or because of play. It remains to be seen, but not someone I'm targeting in redraft leagues at this point, but obviously something to pay attention to. Now, Tim, today you have put out an article over at the Washington Post, which the responses to it have been, of course, measured and nuanced, talking about the Los Angeles Lakers and if they will miss the playoffs or not. So let's talk a little bit of Lakers here, just to double down on the hot takes that come back your way.
Some have, but not all of them.
All right, let's talk
Yeah, Luka. I mean, I think the Lakers are going to obviously be better because they have plenty better than they were last year, obviously because they have a certain player who's the best player in the world, and maybe the best player of all time on their team. However, after that, they have a lot of issues. They have no big men on the team. They have JaVale McGee, who isn't good, and then they have though he might actually put up some fantasy numbers this year because he's going to have to get some minutes. But even then, I wouldn't rely on him in a fantasy situation. But then they've got Ivica Zubac, who isn't very good. And Mo Wagner, who's a rookie, who, going back to your point about Rondé, he had some kind of knee bruise in summer league and he hasn't practiced since.
Yeah, that's so worrying.
He's
going to
miss the whole preseason. So, that's a problem. At point guard, Lonzo Ball is not playing again. We're recording this Thursday afternoon in California. He's not playing tonight against the Kings. Hasn't played at all in the preseason after a knee procedure for him.
You're breaking up there. We can not getting a good connection.
For the regular season, that means I'm probably going to start. I've got pretty good service.
No, you're back now.
Okay, good. They don't have a lot of good defenders. They have a lot of guys that need the ball. They don't have a lot of shooters. I wrote a column today about how I think they're going to miss the playoffs, and I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs and go 35-47, but I think they could go 45-37 and miss the playoffs. And I think that's more likely to me than, they could also win 47-48 games and get in. I mean, I think it's going to be close, but I just look at their overall team and I just think they have a lot of structural flaws that are going to make it a lot harder for them than a lot of these people who are just kind of assuming they're going to be one of the top two or three teams in the West are going to expect once the season gets going here.
Yeah, it's a weird roster, definitely. The Lonzo Ball, Rajon Rondo situation is confusing. There was the quote that Walton had saying if the season started tomorrow, Rondo would be the starter. But then there was also Dave McMenamin who said that Walton said to him personally that Rondo would be the starter on opening night. So it is hard to get a full understanding of how that dynamic's going to play out.
Well, I'll just say now, Rondo's going to start on opening night.
Okay.
Because, I'm not saying that. I mean, I've been around for a couple days here. I'm not saying that I'm reporting this, but if you just look at it logically, Lonzo hasn't really played in a game yet. And yeah, we're less than 2 weeks from the start of the regular season. So, to me, I don't see them just throwing him out there for 30 minutes a game right off the bat. And the other thing, frankly, is that, LeBron James wanted the Lakers to sign Rajon Rondo, right? I mean, he wanted them to sign Rondo. He wanted them to sign Lance. So I think that should give you some kind of idea as to what LeBron James would like them to do when the season starts. And, believe it or not, the best player in the league is probably going to have some kind of say in terms of who is out there and when.
That is true. He will have a say there. And I have got it projected in my daily projections and short-term projections on Basketball Monster that Rondo will begin the season as the starter. I don't think he's going to hold that job all season. But yeah, even when we look at Lonzo's minutes, he's not going to get to that same level he played last season where he was playing 34 a night and then coming back from an injury playing 40 a night, which was absolute malpractice from Luke Walton and could very well have contributed to the fact that Lonzo hasn't played a game in 5 months. So that is a concern there as well. He won't get back to that same level. I don't think that they can go this whole season with Rondo as a starter because it just isn't that good. And the defensive issues, and we saw those defensive issues in Cleveland last season, Rondo is not going to fix those at all when Lonzo is the best defender on this team.
Yeah, and that to me is the real problem with the Lakers. And this is more of a basketball conversation than a fantasy one, but they just don't have good defensive players. I have been encouraged by Josh Hart starting Tuesday and also tonight. I think he's better than KCP. I think he's got a chance to be really good. I think he's a better player than Kyle Kuzma, for example, even though Kyle's gotten a lot more hype because of how last year went. If I'm betting on one of them long-term, I'm betting on Josh Hart being a better long-term NBA player. And especially for the way the Lakers, are going to, Josh Hart's a perfect fit next to LeBron. He's the kind of guy you want out there with LeBron. You know, so I've been encouraged by that. But look, Brandon Ingram last year did shoot, I think he shot 39% from three, which is better. However, he shot less than two threes a game. He has to prove he can be a real threat from behind the arc. He has to prove he can play without the ball. You know, he was good at the end of last season with the ball in his hands. He's going to start at point guard tonight with Rondo getting the night off and Lonzo being hurt. But I know what Brandon Ingram can do if he has the ball in his hands, just like you can know what 75% of NBA players can do with the ball in their hands. I mean, remember, Michael Carter-Williams averaged like, what, 14-7-7 playing in Philly with the ball in his hands all the time. I mean, you could put up numbers playing in an up-tempo system with the ball in your hands a lot. Yeah, well, right. I mean, look, there are plenty of guys. You go back through the history of the league, you play in an up-tempo system, you can put up numbers. So that, to me, isn't – I'm not looking at a situation like that and going, oh, man, this guy's really showing me something, putting up big numbers, you know, running the point in March for a team that's not going anywhere. I don't care about that. You know, I think Brandon Ingram's a good player, but, you know, if he's going to become the star that the Lakers kind of need him to be, he needs to prove he can play without the ball and do the stuff that's necessary to play next to a player like LeBron, which he hasn't really done yet. So they just have a lot of questions, and they're going to be a fascinating team to watch because of that. But I do think from a fantasy perspective, you know, Luke Walton is talking about playing 10, 11, 12 guys. They've got a lot of they've got a lot of guys who like to shoot. They've got a lot of guys who are going to want to play. You know, from a fantasy perspective, I am curious to see what they look like because they've got a lot of you know, they've got a lot of different ways they can go. And I'm not sure that anybody's minutes outside of LeBron's are going to be high enough that people are going to be thrilled. You know, and I guess maybe Ingram, people are going to be thrilled with their production because I just don't – I don't know if they're going to get the kind of volume opportunities that people would like.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that nearly every one of them is getting overdrafted. Ingram, Kuzma, Ball to a degree, even LeBron is going pretty high, and I think he's going to take a marginal step, not even a step back, because people look at what LeBron did last season, and he was excellent, but for the previous four or five seasons before that, he was a guy that was about the eighth or ninth best player, and I think that's probably where he should be. So he was the fourth best player on a per-game basis last season, but prior to that, ninth, sixth, and eighth in the previous three seasons. He's getting drafted at pick four in some leagues, and I don't think he's going to be able to replicate what he did, and nor will he want to replicate what he did in Cleveland. And I think that will be something that does drop him down. Then all those other guys do tend to get a little bit overrated for the Lakers. We're getting into the home stretch here. Tim, I want to talk about the Grizzlies because I hated their coaching hire process. I talked about this in yesterday's podcast with JB right. Bickerstaff. I don't understand some of his lineup decisions, starting Chandler Parsons at the three when Parsons was almost exclusively a power forward last season. Can't move as a small forward. You just signed Kyle Anderson to a big deal and brought him off the bench. Now it came out today that Anderson's dealing with a sore Achilles, but he still played in that game, starting 32-year-old zero upside Garrett Temple when you've got a bunch of other young shooting guards who've shown stuff. Dylan Brooks, Marshawn Brooks, Wayne Seldon, Andrew Harrison even, who showed a bit. And I would argue that none of them are actually worse than Temple, and some of them may actually be better. I don't understand what the Grizzlies are looking for here. They're going in the opposite direction. Everybody else, we want to slow it right down. What are we making of these initial decisions? Are things going to change here, or is it just going to be a complete mess of a lineup type scenario in Memphis?
I'm going to give JB just a little bit of a pass here, okay, in that, you know, I'm not disagreeing with your assessment of the search or any of that, but in terms of just lineup stuff, I mean, look, a lot of coaches, especially early on in the preseason, are going to try different stuff, and
that's true.
A lot of times they'll default to the veteran guy, and Garrett is a well-respected veteran guy, and he's a decent player. I'm with you that, you know, I would like to see them play Dylan Brooks, you know, and probably just have him start there, given the way he looked last year, and maybe play Kyle Anderson, like you said. And my guess is they probably end up going one of those directions, but, you know, a lot of this stuff, you know, if you draft a guy like Dylan or Kyle in a deeper league or at the end of a redraft league, and, you know, in the first week of the season, they're not starting, I wouldn't panic too much because, you know, for a lot of these teams, you know, the first few weeks of the year are, you know, that's when you're doing a lot of trial and error and you're trying to figure out exactly what your rotation looks like. And I think that's doubly true for a Memphis team that, you know, is trying to integrate Mike Conley back in the mix, has a new, you know, fully in charge now coach, even though he was there last year. They have Kyle Anderson. They have Brooks coming back. They have a lot of stuff to kind of sort out. And I think that could lead to some experimentation that could take a little bit while to play out, but I also wouldn't, assume that whatever they do today is what it's going to look like in March either. But you know, my guess is that, you know, even though Garrett has started some now, my guess is those younger guys are going to get plenty of opportunities. And it certainly wouldn't surprise me if at some point, either by the end of this month or beyond, that whether it's Dylan Brooks or Kyle or whatever, that they're not going in a younger direction for a variety of reasons.
It's one of my favorite stats from last season that Dylan Brooks played the most minutes out of every rookie. I don't think many people would.
It is a great stat.
When I first heard it, I couldn't believe it that was the case, but he played an absolute ton, and he actually showed a little bit towards the end of last season in terms of when they were in full tank mode. He was getting the ball in his hands and he was scoring a ton. I don't think that's who he is as a player, but as you mentioned, when that stuff goes down in March and April, anyone who's got the ball in their hands a ton in the NBA can put up those numbers, and that's exactly what he did there. So I'm not sure that's necessarily going to be something that carries over. But another new situation is Mike Budenholzer in Milwaukee. Tim, the Budenholzer effect, we've got a coach who knows how to coach now in charge there. We're going to see them up their three-point attempts. What does this mean for the overall way this team plays? Are we looking at a faster pace? The threes seem more obvious. Does this, you know, from what we've seen in that initial, they absolutely smacked the Bulls, and that's fair enough because the Bulls are terrible. But the Budenholzer effect, it feels pretty real in Milwaukee.
I'm with you. I like their summer a lot. I thought the Brook Lopez signing for them in particular was great. You know, giving the ball to Giannis Antetokounmpo and getting out of the way is usually a good plan. And playing Budenholzer, you know, playing the way Budenholzer likes to as an up-tempo team, with ball movement, with three-pointers, running pick and rolls with Giannis, you know, running pick and pops with Brook, to kind of space the floor a lot like what, LeBron has had so much success with, right? I mean, they can roll out lineups where they've got, you know, you could have Giannis, Middleton, Tony Snell, Ersan Ilyasova, and Brook Lopez out there. All five guys, they, you know, with Giannis and with the ball in his hands, those four other guys can all shoot well from three, right? You could have Brogdon out there instead of Ilyasova too, or Bledsoe or whatever. But they've got a lot of options in terms of spreading the floor, moving the ball till they get an open shot. And letting Giannis go to work. I mean, my bold predictions column is coming out next week, but I'm picking Giannis to win MVP. I think he's just going to have a gigantic season in Milwaukee, and I think they're going to be really good. And like I said, I thought the Brooks signing for them was great. He's a really solid player. He can space the floor. He's a good offensive fit for them. Gives them a dynamic they haven't had inside there. You know, Thon has, you know, occasionally shown the ability to stretch out and shoot the three, but
yeah, when he plays Toronto, that's it for Thon.
Yes, in the playoffs, right? Yeah. He just hasn't been consistent enough yet. So, Brook is a guy who can walk right in and be very good in that role and be good. So yeah, I'm with you. I think the Budenholzer thing is a real thing. I expect the Bucks to be really good, and I expect Giannis in particular to really take advantage of the extra spacing and, you know, ability to attack the paint that I think that, you know, this roster they've started to construct around him is going to allow him to do.
Let's go back to New York now and talk about the Knicks. We had a massive game from Alonzo Trier the other day. I think he scored 20 points in a quarter. He is somewhat of a black hole, someone who also dealt with some off-court issues in college in Arizona that caused him to slip out of the draft. But he looked pretty strong there. At the moment, Tim, he is a two-way guy, but a lot of whispers coming out of New York that Ron Baker may not make that final roster. Of course, there's still the Joakim Noah stretch possibility or likelihood that's going to go down. So the Knicks do seem to like what Trier can do. You know, what do we see out of that performance from him? Do you think that he can force his way onto the main roster this season?
He might be able to. I mean, look, Alonzo Trier is what he is, right? I mean, he's a 6'2 guard who, like you said, I mean, he, you know, who he's a lot like. He's a lot like Russ Smith.
That's a hit.
NBA fans remember Russ Smith, who, you know, he was over in China last year. I think he was averaging 60, he was scoring 50 or 60 points a game in China. And
I'm going to look it up. He's a nuclear, it was funny what he was averaging.
Yeah, I mean, he was scoring just absurd amounts of points in China. And look, like, Russ is a really good scorer, just like Alonzo is, but he also is a guy that isn't going to pass much. And he's, he's a, kind of an undersized point guard who doesn't pass. And that's what Trier is. So, I mean, is Trier good enough to be a back end of a roster guy? Yeah. I mean, Ron Baker is not good, so they could move on from him. And, maybe they move Trier out of the roster, but, on a team with Frankie Smokes and Trey Burke and Moutier still at this point and Tim Hardaway and Courtney Lee. I mean, there's a lot of guys there. So even if Trier does get on there, I don't anticipate, that being much more than, an end of the bench guy from a fantasy perspective. It's not going to mean anything. But, yeah, he might slip onto the end of the roster if it works out that way. But I don't anticipate him becoming a – even a rotation player for the Knicks this season if it does happen.
Russ Smith averaged 33.6 points in 34 minutes a game coming off the bench in China, along with 7 rebounds and 7 assists with 2 steals. So, yeah, some pretty interesting numbers. Those China numbers are always really funny to look at. They're always super. I think Gershon Yuvesele averaged about 26, 10, and 12 or some crazy numbers over there.
Yes. The
China numbers are super inflated. Just go look at Marshawn Brooks' China numbers and you'll get an understanding of how crazily inflated they are. Mario Hezonja, disappointing in the first two preseason games. I thought that he would start alongside Kevin Knox. They started Lance Thomas, who I don't really understand what Lance Thomas's appeal is at this point. He can play solid defense, but I think Hezonja showed quite a bit last season. He was struggling. He was someone I was looking at quite a bit in fantasy drafts, but the way he's been used for the first two games is a little bit troublesome. Do you think that they'll just continue to keep him in that sixth man role, obviously keeping Knox as a starter?
Yeah, I mean, look, that Knicks situation's a lot like Memphis, right? Where you have it, ironically, since David Fizdale's there, but you have a new coach that's coming in, even though JB was there, you have a new coach that's coming in to New York who's trying to figure out what he's got. Look, I think Hezonja could get some chances to start there. Lance Thomas is a very solid veteran who will do his job and knows where to be. And if you're playing out there with, Kevin Knox and Frankie Smokes and Trey Burke, you might want a veteran who knows where he's got to be and knows what to do out there. So that could be part of what the thinking is there. If you're rolling out a starting five of Enes Kanter, Mario Hezonja and Kevin Knox in your front court, as a rookie, good luck stopping anybody, right? I mean, that could be just a tire fire defensively. So, I think Hezonja's going to get plenty of minutes and chances to prove himself. He was good the second half of last year. But again, I'm always skeptical about guys putting up numbers after February on bad teams, in terms of if they can sustain it. But Hezonja's a talent, and, I think if he is playing the four and they can kind of use his skill set in that role, he's a guy that could be interesting for them. So, I'm certainly not going to rule him out, but, I think at this point, maybe he gets some minutes ahead of Lance Thomas and ends up starting. But to me, that's a team that's going to – their big usage guys are going to be Hardaway and then Knox and then probably Burke if he's starting at the point guard spot. I think even if Hezonja does start – I mean, frankly, from a fantasy perspective, it might be better for Hezonja if he comes off the bench, because if he's not – if his minutes aren't lined up with Hardaway and Knox, he's got a chance to probably get the ball in his hands a little more and do a bit. If he's out there with that starting group, I would have to think he's going to be much more of a spot-up three-point shooting guy as opposed to one who's going to have the ball in his hands and be able to make some plays like he did in Orlando.
Yeah, because there's also Kanter in that starting group. We're on the bench, we're looking at Courtney Lee and Nilakina and guys who are far, far lower usage options there for the Knicks. We've got one more point we want to get to here before we leave, Tim, and that's the Sacramento Kings and their front court. They did run out a lineup with 4 centers on the court at one time in their first preseason game. Willie Cauley-Stein started alongside, I think, surprisingly, Skel Labissiere with Marvin Bagley off the bench. I feel like it's going to just be a complete mess again in that front court. Dave Yeager doesn't trust rookies. Marvin Bagley hasn't shown enough to force his way into a large role. Cauley-Stein couldn't get a large role last season. Labissiere was sent to the G League. from what I understand, Randolph and Kufos are barely going to play for Sacramento. Is that the understanding you get there as they try and see what these other big men can do?
Yeah, I'm curious to see them tonight. But, I mean, it's just the safe assumption with Sacramento is they're always a dumpster fire. And to really expect anything different isn't really a surprise, right? I mean, it's just this is what the Kings do. They do stupid things, and they put themselves in stupid spots. And, you know, I mean, still, it still frankly baffles me that Luka Doncic went past number two and that they didn't draft him there on a team that doesn't have a three. It's going to play Nemanja Bjelica at the three, or, you know, is talking about playing Marvin Bagley, who I think is a center at the three. I mean, it's really just insane. So, yeah, I mean, if you're in your draft and you have a choice between drafting a King or drafting somebody else, I would just tell you to probably draft somebody else because, you know, Bogdanović is going to get some minutes, assuming his knee issue isn't a serious one. Buddy Hield can provide some shooting for you if you need some threes. Yeah, I'm a believer in De'Aaron Fox. I think he could be a very good player, but that situation is such a mess. The spacing is not going to be good. Like, to your point, the rotations are going to change all the time, and they're just going to get annihilated on a nightly basis out here in the West. I mean, I think they're going to be the worst team in the league from a record standpoint, and, you know, it just would be hard for me to look at them and really count on any of their guys to give me consistent production, because other than Bogdanović, who's the one guy I think is going to get legitimate minutes and play, assume he's healthy, and maybe De'Aaron Fox, and, you know, assuming he takes a step forward from where he was last year, I just don't trust any of these other guys to, on a nightly basis, be out there and playing on a consistent basis, because, you know, Dave Yeager over the past couple of years has proven that he is, you know, more than willing to change things on a daily basis in terms of who he's playing and when and with who and for how long. And it's just hard from a fantasy perspective to know who to use in that spot.
Yeah, exactly. And that's always been the case. We just can never trust what Jaeger's going to do on a nightly basis. Plus, their players aren't very good. It's a horrible combination. I agree with you. They're going to be the worst team in the NBA this season. It's not a great scenario for Kings fans or people trying to exploit a lot of value from them. From a fantasy point of view, Tim, that'll wrap us up for today. It was great to have you on the show. Go and check out Tim's article on the Lakers and the playoffs today at the Washington Post. Everyone, I'm sure, already follows you, Tim. But if they don't, where can they go find you on Twitter?
Just go to @TimBontemps on Twitter. And like you said, read my work in the Post. Listen to the Post and Go podcast. And everybody, good luck with their drafts and enjoy the season. I'm very fired up for the year. It's going to be a pretty great year, I think, for the league. There's a ton of fun storylines to follow. And, you know, from a fantasy perspective, there's, you know, a bunch of new young guys coming in the league that are interesting. There's a lot of teams like the Lakers who have a lot going on. I mean, it's going to be fun to follow along. So I'm excited to see what happens.
Absolutely. We all can't wait for the season to kick off in a little over a week's time. Tim, thanks for coming on. Make sure, guys, you are subscribing to this podcast and, of course, Tim's podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify. Also on YouTube, give it a thumbs up, click subscribe, all that great stuff. It's a great way of helping the show out. Tim, once again, thank you.
Anytime, Josh. Happy to do it, man.
Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Quincy Pondexter.